In a world where pet dog owners are bombarded on all sides with well-meaning training solutions steeped in confusing jargon, two dog trainers from the ancient county of Dorset share a passion for gardening, Belgian shepherds, and helping frustrated and struggling dog owners turn their unruly canine companions into the perfect walking partner. They vow to simplify the dog training process using everyday examples and solutions, providing the light at the end of the tunnel. Welcome to the Fun Focus Play podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 32 of the Fun Focus Play podcast. I'm Natasha Lewis and I'm joined today by the wonderful Claire Hickson from Talk to the Paw. Hello, Claire.
Hi, Natasha. Thanks so much for inviting me along.
That's all right. Lovely to have you.
I'm really looking forward to chatting with you.
Good. So we have decided to have a little chat about shy, nervous, anxious dogs and how this lockdown period could be affecting your dog.
Yes, absolutely. Shy and nervous dogs are dogs that I work with really frequently. And sometimes they can be misunderstood, I think, because sometimes their shy and nervous behaviour can come out in different ways. Let's have an explore.
I think we should, because I've actually got one of these dogs.
Which one?
Cassie.
Okay.
My youngest.
And how do you know that she's shy and nervous? Tell me what that looks like.
I think the easiest way to describe the reasons why, you know, she's not so much shy, but she's nervous and anxious.
Okay.
So
what do you see her doing that makes that? How can you physically describe it? What does she look like?
One of the things is if it's something is she's very alert all the time.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Sort of hyper alert.
Yeah.
She is, if something happens that she's not comfortable with, she will either run and stick her head between my legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or she'll go and sit in a corner somewhere shaking.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think we have got a nervous, anxious dog.
Yeah.
And also, when we're out and about and I'm walking with her, one of the things that I've noticed is if that's another dog around, her whole body language changes. Okay. If there's a dog that she doesn't know, her whole body language changes. And she would like nothing more than to just chase that dog away. And if it doesn't move away, she will jump on top of it.
Okay. So she wants to get a distance between her and that dog as quickly as she can in whatever way.
In whatever way she can achieve it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a really common thing that we see with dogs that we would describe as fearful or anxious. For me, there's quite a big difference between a dog being fearful and a dog being anxious. So if I try and explain what I mean by that. So I see fear as that immediate feeling of being scared of something that's actually there. So my partner's scared of spiders. If he saw a massive big house spider,
he'd
be feeling fear at that point because it's visible, it's moving, it's present. But what I see as anxiety is where fear starts to morph into a worry about something that could be there. So it's not necessarily there, but it could be there. So he started to panic every time he went into the bathroom because there could be a spider in there. Then he's developing an anxiety and it's moving on from fear.
Yeah.
And some dogs will display all those things you told me about. So that hyper alertness and that all those changes in body language, when they're anxious about something that's not there, that could be there.
Yeah.
For those dogs, it's much more detrimental and harder to treat, from my point of view, because we're now dealing with a dog who there isn't an obvious scary thing present.
No.
And so often those dogs need more help. So if a dog is nervous of something that's actually there, then we can treat that because we can control the thing that's actually there. So we can control how far away it is. We can control how long it stays for, and we can control how intense it is. So what it's doing. So for example, if I had a dog who was nervous of other dogs, then I could use the other dog. I could control the distance that dog was at. I could control what that dog was doing, so how fast it was moving or which way it was facing. But if I've got a dog, it sounds like Cassie maybe a little bit, who's constantly on the lookout in case something might be there.
She is, yeah.
A kind of different job on my hands.
Yeah. So yeah, because it's not just a simple case of, you know, making sure that you're making, you know, you're showing the dog that actually there's nothing to worry about by, you know, playing with her in these situations, or, you know, feeding her in these situations, because, you know, if there's nothing there for you to show her that actually there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, how do you stop that from escalating?
Okay, so for me, my starting point would be looking at creating some optimism. So where you've got a degree of anxiety, so worry about something that could be there that isn't there.
Yeah.
Then these dogs end up very pessimistic. So they end up wary of anything that's happening, any person, any dog, anything, any change in their environment. And so where I would start is looking at starting to create some optimism. So I would start to look at what can we find that the dog does actually enjoy? Because often when we find a truly anxious dog, a common denominator would be, I see it often in dogs who've come over from foreign rescues, where they're just totally anxious about everything that's happening because they've never been in this kind of environment before.
Yeah.
And they can't play, because in order to be able to play, you've got to feel quite safe and secure in your environment if those feelings, those behaviors are going to come out. And often they don't eat to any extent either. So the first thing that I would start looking at is how can we find what motivates a dog? And dogs are motivated by all sorts of different things. So they may be motivated by food. They may be motivated by scent. So using their noses. Or they may be actually motivated by, like you've described with Cassie, creating distance. So having a safe place that they can go to. And I think the important thing to start off with is that we don't put any pressure on these dogs to be less anxious. I love that quote. In the history of man, never has anyone calmed down by being told to calm down.
Yeah.
can't increase a dog's optimism by telling them not to be worried about something. You have to increase it by allowing them the time and the space to kind of work that out for themselves.
That is one of the things that I found with Cassie, actually, that if we can keep the other dog at a distance and just let her observe that dog and realize for herself that that dog isn't a threat to her, then she's actually then after a while able to sort of go up to that dog, have a quick sniff, and then walk away again.
Yeah.
So, and I, she needs to be given that time, and most of the time that's just simply impossible. Because
so time is vital, and I think when dogs are generally anxious and nervous and pessimistic about everything, it's almost like it takes them a lot longer to process things.
Yeah.
So for most of us, when we get in our car and we go for a drive, I'm not doing that very much at the moment, but when we do, we're able to process what else is happening on the road. So, oh, there's a car turning left, or there's a bike coming down the hill, or there's a pedestrian just about to step off the curb. And we're able to process what's happening really, really quickly and make a decision very, very quickly based on our previous experience. But if you're like me and you've ever had a really bad car accident, so for me, a few years ago, I was turning right and a motorbike hit me side on and went over the top of me. And for quite a few months after that, when I went to turn right out of a junction, I couldn't make the decision to pull out. So I was unable to process quickly what was happening because I was very uncertain that my brain would say there's nothing there, you're safe to pull out, and then I wouldn't be able to pull out, and then it would say there's nothing there, you're able to pull out, and I just couldn't process, so I would avoid it. I just turn left all the time. But I think for dogs that present with anxiety, they can't process quickly what's happening in their environment, so because things that should have been predictable in the past aren't predictable anymore. And I think so they need time. They need time to process. Like Cassie needs time to process that that dog isn't any threat.
Yeah.
And that might take 5 minutes.
It might take 10 minutes.
Yeah. For her to work out, oh, I'm okay. And during that time, she's going to go through, I'm okay, I'm not okay. I'm okay, I'm not okay. I'm okay, I'm not okay. Until she goes, oh, no, I am okay. And you kind of see like this big breath go in, oh, I'm okay. And then she's processed, but she's processed that one dog. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, she might come across another dog and she needs time.
Yeah, and the whole process will start again. And the one thing that I found is one of the key things is that once she's finally figured out that a dog is okay, she'll actually shake herself. She'll shake all that stress away.
Yeah.
And that to me then is a good indication that actually, yeah, you can cope with it now.
Yeah.
You can cope with a quick hello to that dog. But I never push her to go and say hello to that dog. If she doesn't want to, well, that's fine. But the problem is other dogs running up to us.
Yeah, that can be a real problem. I like to teach kind of emergency keep that dog away from you things. And putting your dog in between your legs where she naturally wants to go, so using that middle cue that middle position can be really helpful because you can protect her. You can throw a handful of treats at the other dog and kind of stop it on its way. But yeah, I think for owners, if you do have a dog that you see as anxious, the first question to ask is, what does that anxiety, like, so what am I seeing? What changes am I seeing my dog that tells me that that's the case? Is it just when something's present, or is my dog now starting to worry about stuff that's not there? Because if your dog's starting to worry about stuff that's not actually there, if they seem to be looking for things, constantly on alert, then my professional opinion is you're going to need to seek some professional help with that.
Yeah, and I would fully agree with that.
Yeah, because, you know, we need to find the starting point to helping your dog feel a little bit better. But one of the easiest things you can do on a walk is just slow down. So really slow down to the dog's pace and let them have that time to process their environment. And that might even mean like you come around a corner and everything changes. So you come from like a quiet road into a busier road. That environment has just changed for the dog, even though it's not really changed for you.
And that dog might have taken that route several times before, but every time you go around the corner, because you don't know what's going to be there, that's still a new environment for that dog, isn't it?
Yeah. And so just slowing down and just allowing them to look around and wait for that moment, like you see with Cassie, where they shake or they just do a deep breath and then they put their head down to the floor and start sniffing again. All those signals, all those things that we can see the dog physically doing, just tell us, oh, okay, my dog's relaxed enough now, I can move on.
Yeah. So
taking the time is really, really important. With things that are really there, so if your dog's anxious about meeting new people or anxious about meeting new dogs, or they're anxious about noises that, you know, they might hear, so things like thunderstorms or fireworks, then there's
fire alarms.
Yeah, there's a lot more we can do as
professionals,
because as I said, we can to some extent control those things that are going on. But the other thing I wanted to kind of look at with anxiety is that if your dog, say your dog's anxious about people, so you see your dog moving and cowering away from a person that's approaching them, or you see them barking and lunging at a person that's approaching them, and both of those things are signs of fear. They're just coming out in different ways. Where was I going with that? Oh, it won't just be the person. So everything that your dog creates a memory for, so every time your dog has a bad experience, that's just banked in like their memory center of their brain. Mm. And each memory will not just be made up of that person, it will be made up of the of everything else that was going on at the same time.
It's the smells and the sights,
yeah, so the
and
scents and the sounds and the sights. And so sometimes what we can see is the anxiety comes out when that thing's not present, because some of those other things that were happening at the same time happen.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example. So back in kind of November, December time, my 4-year-old German Shepherd started to panic with storms.
Mm.
So heavy rain and storms. And we still don't know what the origin of that behaviour was. But he started to associate that feeling of panic. And when I say panic, I mean, he was scratching at doors. He was trying to dig through the floor. If you were there, he was climbing up you, trying to get into your head. It was really very horrible for us to see him in that kind of state. But he started to associate that feeling of panic with a certain area of the house. So because when that had first happened for him, and we don't know, chances are I think we were out when it happened, he was in our living room. So we started to notice that whenever we wanted to settle in the living room, all the other three dogs would settle down, but he would start to get increasingly anxious. So he would be pacing around, climbing on me, climbing on Dave, panting really heavily, nibbling at bits of himself. Like he just couldn't settle in that environment. And so what we would do is we'd let him out in the garden. And then over a period of about a week, the association had gone from the living room to the rest of the house. So he would be out in the garden, be chucking it down with rain, and we'd try and get him back in, and he wouldn't come back in the house.
Mm.
Whilst the anxiety had an origin, it now started to become more general.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because the way we got over it, we treated him with some medication in the end because it was so severe he was going to hurt himself. And that enabled us to get on top of it. And then we've had a period of time when we haven't had any storms. So we've weaned him off that medication. He's now much better. But I could be in the shed where I am now and there could be one hoolie of a thunderstorm going on outside and he wouldn't bat an eyelid. So it has become very location associated.
Yeah.
That can happen very quickly with our dogs. So, for instance, with something like firework problems, you can see that the anxiety start to build in your dog as it starts to get dark, because fireworks only go off after dark and it's always at this time of day. And so possibly with those dogs, if a firework went off in the middle of the day, they wouldn't react to it because there isn't that association there.
Yeah, because all the building blocks for that behaviour to be triggered aren't actually there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when we start looking at things like anxiety, a lot of professionals may say to people, we need to find the trigger. It won't just be one trigger. And it's really important to really unravel that ball of wool and see what all the associations are before we can start to build things up again. So I think it's a really cool way is just to write things down, just keep a little diary of what, where.
Yeah,
did
it's like
those changes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, I always like to liken it to having a picnic with a cream tea.
Yeah.
It's not a cream tea picnic if you haven't got the tea or the strawberries.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so if those are missing from the whole cream tea, so you've got your scones, you've got your clotted cream, you've got your sugar, you've got your milk, you've got your water, and you have got your you've got your jam.
Yeah,
but you've forgot to bring tea bags. It's not cream tea without the tea bags.
Yeah, absolutely. So it needs all those elements
It needs all those elements for that behavior, for that whole picture to trigger, to start off that behavior, doesn't it? The way I like to explain it.
And I always find it a strange phenomenon with our dogs, but does that worry them, that those general things can happen really, really, really quickly. So if you've got a dog who doesn't like car travel, then that can backtrack to you putting your shoes on, putting your coat on, grabbing your keys, getting the dog's lead. And you start to see all those anxiety behaviours that panting and pacing or whining or just going and hiding under the dining room table. You start to see them really early on, long before you've got to the car. So we, as professionals, we would have to start with, you know, where does the dog's first start showing these signs? But if you've got a dog who is generally just anxious about life, so with those dogs you'll see them, it's going to affect their appetite, so their ability to be able to eat and ability to play and interact with you, and they tend to rest, so they tend to sleep a lot because sleeping makes them feel better, but they're not resting, so they don't get really good sleep that they need. Like they're resting, but they're still on alert, you know, so you might just see one ear still up. And they're not able to go over on their side and just totally, totally relax. So definitely with those dogs, you're going to need some professional help to get your dog over that. And it's going to be a time. There's going to be a really big amount of time involved.
Yeah, it's not that, you know, for these kind of dogs, that's never a quick solution, is there?
No, It never is. I think the one thing that we need to be honest with people about as trainers is if your dog has had a traumatic event, like unfortunately we don't have a TARDIS or a time capsule where we can go back to a time when that didn't happen for your dog. So we can't erase it. We can only move forward from where we are. But it's still going to always be part of your dog's memory system. So what we're looking to do as trainers is create new memories of good stuff, which override the bad memories of bad stuff.
Yeah.
But we can't ever eliminate it completely.
No, we can't. We can't sort of go back and, you know, if you're on a computer, you could say, oh, well, that was a bad file, so I'll just delete it.
Yeah,
you can't do that with something that's happened to your dog in the past, because it's in the past. You can't access that behaviour anymore. You can't access that moment in time where that behaviour started.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not simply going in, you know, like you would do in a computer and just say, well, I don't need that file anymore, so I'll just delete it.
Yeah.
So you sort of have to overwrite it. But in overwriting, there will always be some remnants of that previous behavior and that previous experience remaining within and lying underneath all this new stuff that we're trying to teach them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is our job as behaviorists and trainers to really be honest with people about that.
I think a lot of people need to realize that it's not going to be resolved by just simply going to see a professional behaviorist like yourself or me and then expecting that behavior to be resolved without them actually putting in any work themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's a time thing, and it's an adjustment thing. Like I always say, if I wanted to change Dave's brain from, oh my God, there's a spider and I'm hyperventilating and sweating and you need to get rid of it for me. If I wanted to change his brain from that to, well, there's a spider, it's really cool, I love spiders, I'm going to go and pick it up and have a look at it. That isn't going to happen overnight. And actually, if we look at that context, it almost feels like impossible, doesn't it, for him to be so scared of spiders to actually be actively loving spiders. Reality is, well, it just feels like an impossible task. Could I get him to a point where he could tolerate them enough, where, you know, where he could be in a room with a spider and say to me, oh, Claire, there's a spider there, do you mind getting rid of it? Yes, I could. So that's a much more realistic expectation.
Yeah. That
I can get him to the point where he can override his panic and his fear. So he's not ending up in that physical state. And for some of our dogs, that's our realism. Like, they might not ever be friends and playing joyfully with other dogs if they're fearful of other dogs, but they may be able to get to a point where they can tolerate the presence of other dogs. And they can see other dogs and they can enjoy themselves with you, so with their owners in the presence of other dogs.
Yeah.
So it's about being realistic. And I do think sometimes we do expect
too much.
Yeah, yeah, we expect too much of our dogs. We just want them to be better, don't we? I would quite like our three little dogs to not bark when someone comes to the door. But the amount of work involved in that, the amount of change that has to happen, it's much more realistic for me to, when they do bark at the door, give them an instant on your bed cue, and they go to their beds and then I reward them for being quiet. So that barking now lasts 2 seconds. It doesn't last for 2 minutes. So sometimes we have to be a bit careful, I think, what's realistic for us to
to be able to achieve. Yeah. Okay. So let's go on to talk about nervous and anxious dogs during lockdown.
Yeah. So
we've sort of covered the general picture of, you know, what an anxious and fearful dogs and a shy dog might look like. But I think the fact that, you know, we're now in lockdown, and I think some dogs are going to be anxious and nervous because things have changed at home.
Yeah. So routine change can really throw some dogs.
Yeah.
So as far as possible, I'm advising people to try and keep their routines to some degree of normal. So for instance, if your dog's nervous and anxious, and the way that that behaviour is displayed is by following you around everywhere, because they feel safe when you're with you, then when you go back to work, that's going to change. They're not going to have that access to you anymore. So simply putting your coat and shoes on and grabbing your keys and leaving through your front door to go and sit in your car for 5 minutes and then coming back in is just keeping that kind of routine and that normality alive without really doing very much. For other dogs in lockdown, the fact that those things that worry them and make them anxious, if those things are outside and they're not having so much access to outside, then they're going to love it. They're going to feel so much better because they haven't got all those external pressures. So it really depends what your dog is nervous and anxious about. Some of the things that I'm seeing are dogs who are more worried when their owners are not present. So I'm seeing dogs increasing like separation problems.
Yeah.
I'm seeing dogs more worried about things in the garden. So kind of like increased fence barking, barking at neighbours over the fence, barking at other dogs, barking in gardens two roads away, and those kind of things.
Yeah, and taking an interest in chasing pigeons and stuff that land on the
things
and barking at those and things like that. They're sort of finding other things to do that they would normally, you know, they'd be at home probably with the owners at work, just chilling out and just snoozing, waiting for their owners to come back in. But now they've sort of got access to the garden and they can get up to all sorts of things and they can sort of discover that these things are actually quite fun.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you're worried about the dog next door and you bark and it goes away, then that's going to make you feel good, because that sense of relief that is gone is going to make you really feel good.
Yeah.
And so you can look to perform that behaviour more often because of the feeling of that it gives you, that feel good feeling it gives you. So for nervous in lockdown, there are benefits and disadvantages. There are loads of benefits, because if we can identify what the dog is nervous and anxious about, then we have the ability now to be able to control those things. So if your dog's nervous and anxious about other dogs, everyone's socially distancing. So that means that you've got more opportunity to control the distance another dog is at, how long it's there for. So actually, for dogs that are worried about things outside, maybe even like traffic, cyclists and things, there's a massive opportunity there to be able to work with your dog in a much better state, because those things aren't so frequent. They're not happening all the time.
Yeah.
So we can give really low, less frequent exposures, and we can have a lot more success. But if your dog is anxious about things in the house, then you're going to see that more frequently. So if they're worried about noises in the house or things that moving people walking past your house or whatever, then it's going to be their worry is going to be more expanded.
Yeah.
So the important things for me are kind of getting that routine right. So for dogs that are anxious, what they really need more than anything other than a safe place to be where they can truly relax is they need predictability. If you feel totally out of control of your environment, things being predictable is going to go a long way to making you feel better.
Yeah.
So that's what gives you back that control that you can influence things that are happening for you. And we've all had it, haven't we? We've all had, you know, we're working and things are pinging into our inbox and then messages coming in here and someone's on the phone and we've got a deadline and we're doing this. And when things start to become less predictable, like we don't know what's going to happen, then they feel much more out of our control. And as soon as we know the answer to something or we create a routine, then we're going to feel a lot better. So yeah. For your anxious dogs, having a routine is my number one thing, making things predictable for them.
Yeah, and I think that routine also needs to be as close as possible to what it was before lockdown as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, you know, can be difficult to do because we've all created new routines during lockdown, haven't we? If we're not physically going out to work, we've all created new routines. So yeah, keeping things as different as normal. The same as normal.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you are working from home, you're probably in a different room. So you could sort of treat that almost the same as if you were physically going to work, is you go into that off, you know, that room that you're now using as your office and just close the door so that the dog hasn't got access to you just the same way they wouldn't have access to you when you're at work.
Yeah, absolutely. So trying to make things as similar as possible. I think the other thing is to look at things that you can do very simply with your dogs that are just going to give them some points in their day where they feel really good. So things to look forward to create that optimism, to increase that optimism in a dog that's naturally pessimistic. So some of the things that I would incorporate into my daily routine with my dog is feeding them in ways that make them feel good. So not necessarily feeding them in a bowl, but maybe feeding them in just throwing a handful of treats onto the grass in the garden and letting them sniff that food out, or maybe playing a little game of chase with you with their food. Hiding their food or putting in different things where they have to maybe bash those things around or push those things.
Yeah, like the Kongs and the Kong wobblers and stuff like that, and snuffle mats and snuffle balls and all that kind of thing. You can all utilize that to sort of, you know, give your dog something slightly different way of sort of getting their food, isn't it?
Yeah, so that they're to look forward to how they're getting their food rather than it just being presented in a bowl, which is boring. I mean, like here we're using our recycling's being collected a lot less than it was, so we're now using our recycling to feed our dogs just simple things like egg boxes and cardboard boxes and
you could just pile up the cardboard boxes and just put the food, you know, just sprinkle the food around in there and let your dog go and get it and find it and work their way through all these cardboard boxes and you know, packing paper that you can sort of screw up in balls and hide treats in and things like that. It, you know, my dogs absolutely love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, our dogs do too. And I think it's important to try it. And if your dog really doesn't like it, it's not a case of, oh, my dog doesn't do it, they don't like it.
It's not the end of the world.
That's information. That's just information. That's not going to work for my dog. Let's find something that does. Yeah. So anything your dog likes or doesn't like, just chalk it up as information rather than disappointment or success. And then, you know, move on to something else. It's you know, some days our dogs will like to eat off a licky mat, and other days they'll like to eat out of a Kong. And maybe some days we'll give them a Kong and they don't want a Kong. They prefer a licky mat. So,
yeah, and another good one I find is, you know, when you've got an empty pop bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, just pop some treats in there and let them play with the bottle to get the treats out. My dogs, you know, most dogs seem to love playing with bottles because they make crinkly noises and they bounce and they, you know, they're quite sort of quite interesting toys to play with.
Yeah. So definitely that would be part of my daily routine, is feeding my dog in different ways. And the second thing that I would look at doing is just, doesn't need to be very long, maybe 2 or 3 minutes, just a tiny little training session. So we've got 4 dogs and they have very short little training sessions with us every day. And, you know, we go and get the treats and we go and get the dog and they're so, so excited that it's my turn for training. And we're not doing very long. We're maybe doing 1 to 2 minutes. No, you know, no more than that, really. But they've, one is they get that one-on-one time with you. And two, we can really increase a dog's optimism by promoting learning. So learning new things and being successful at learning new things really helps build their general confidence. So you want to start off with stuff that's really simple and really easy for them to do. Not, you know, taking an anxious dog and trying to teach it to go and retrieve a beer from the fridge or whatever. But just start with really simple things that we can do. I'm just going to stop my partner coming in. He's going to come in and make a noise. So I've just put a stop sign up on the window. Just tiny little bits of training, and it might even be something like learning some eye contact with you, or responding to their name, or being able to touch their nose to your hand. But something, things that are really, really simple for them, where they can get success, so that they start to go, oh, I did that, I feel really good. So anything that you can do that's going to help your dog just feel good and succeed. And so when you're doing that, it's important that you recognize that it's not the end goal that you're looking at, because when we put an end goal in place, we put pressure on. So it's not the end goal of having the dog touch your hand, it's the journey on the way there. So it's looking for your dog to be engaged with you, to be wagging their tail, for their ears to be nice and neutral, for their eyes to be nice and bright. And it's about building that relationship through training, rather than saying, I'm going to teach my dog to do this and that's my goal and that's my aim. So for me, training is very much about how both of us are feeling during that period of time, rather than what we've actually achieved at the end of it. It's that feeling of connection, isn't it? It's just that the feeling of connection that you get when you're just with your dog trying something new, and you're both learning. So
yeah, and like you say, you know, whatever training you do with your dog, it doesn't have to be difficult. Like you say, nose touches, or you know, just teaching your dog to spin. To follow a treat round in a big circle and teach them to spin. My dog absolutely loves it. I put a little video of her spinning on my Facebook page the other day, and people absolutely loved it. But it's just so simple.
Yeah, it is really simple. You know, most of our dogs, unless they've come from a background where people have been really bad news for them. And then it's going to take time even to build a relationship with you. But most of them want to be around us. They want to be doing stuff with us, even if it is just, you know, following us down the garden. So if I'm working with a really anxious dog, I can think of one dog on my casebooks at the moment who he doesn't even lift his head when his owner comes into the room. Like, she might as well not exist.
Mm.
She puts his food down in the kitchen and he'll go in and eat it when there's no one around. you know, he's so, so anxious. He just gets a really nice, tasty treat thrown at him if he just lifts his head up and acknowledges that she's come into the room.
Yeah.
So it may be something as simple as just feed your dog a couple of treats just for following you down the garden, or, you know, approaching you even, wanting to see what you're doing. Because what we want to do is we want to create...
good experiences.
Yeah, we want to create experiences. We want to increase the dog's desire to go and explore stuff. So... we're looking for them to, you know, that moment where they go, oh, what are you doing? And they start to become a little bit inquisitive. That's going to enable us a way in to improve on that. So I reward just with treats. I just pop a few treats on the floor if my anxious dog is inquisitive as to what I'm doing. Mm. So they're real, you know, they're really good starting points that you can start with dogs like this. But yeah, those would be my main advice. So feed your dog in different ways, have a little play and training session every day, and keep things as routine as you possibly can.
Well, thank you very much, Claire. I think that was really, really useful. Oh. So where can people find out a little bit more about you?
Oh yeah, so I'm in the Bristol and Bath area, so if you're in that area, then look me up. Otherwise, I have a Facebook page, so facebook.com/talktothepoorbristol. And we're posting up loads of free bits of advice and all sorts of training on there, is going on there. And then my website is www.talktothepoor.io. So have a look at the website. We have some online courses running at the moment. We have online puppies, a puppy coronavirus course, and some tricks.
Yeah, I think most dog trainers these days have got online courses. I've got some as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So so we've got all that, in particularly if you're in our area. So yeah, that's where you can find me, those two places, Facebook and on the website. Well, I think probably listed on the CAEBT website.
Yeah, I'm there as well.
Yeah, if you have behaviour problems. So all the places you can find Natasha, you can find me.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Claire, for coming on.
No problem.
It's really been lovely, lovely to speak to you and to see you again after all these years.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
It has been a long time.
Okay. You take care.
Yeah, you take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.